Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics and Rana McBerto, who is your host. Thank you so kindly for being part of the show. Welcome aboard. Welcome aboard, everybody. Michael Rodden, AVQ. Welcome aboard, folks. All right, let's go ahead and get started. What is the program going to be about today? Again, Senator calls out evangelicals on COVID. Seth David Radwell on American Schism. And Saki V. Ducey. That's what we're going to talk about today. But let's go ahead and get started real quickly. From Michael Rodden writes that moment, Joint Chiefs Chairman feared Trump was laying the groundwork for a coup, which he was. We came so close to losing our nation on January 6th. What stopped that from happening? First and foremost was Trump's incompetence being the hallmark of his term in office. Second was our military generals recognized Trump for the fascist he was. They knew what would happen if he gained control of the military, and they prevented such an outcome from happening. True patriots to country, not party. Also from Michael Rodden, by 2070, more than 3 billion people may live outside the human climate niche. If we don't act now to curb climate change, we may be faced with the migration of a third of the world's population. I've read that before. Climate study essentially predicting our civilization's demise. This is far worse than I ever imagined. There is a distinct possibility that we are going to see 3 billion climate refugees by 2070. I can't even imagine what that's going to look like or how our civilization can cope. We could not cope with a migration of 3 billion people. More than likely, you'll have a whole lot of dead people. No doubt about that. Over the coming 50 years, 3 billion people are projected to be left outside the climate conditions that have served humanity well over the past 6,000 years. Absent climate migration or migration, mitigation or migration, a substantial part of humanity will be exposed to mean annual temperatures warmer than nearly anywhere today. 3 billion people will be exposed by median average temperatures of 29 degrees C, a situation found in present climate only in 0.8% of the globe, land surface mostly concentrated in the Sahara, but in 27 projected over 19% of land. I don't remember, Michael Rodden was, I don't remember if it was Bridge MCP or E2247 who found this study during yesterday's show, but you found something crazy. I can't even deal with it. It's just too much. Rodden, we are going to get the job done. In 1972, MIT study predicted that rapid economic growth could lead to societal collapse in the mid-21st century. A new paper shows we're unfortunately right on schedule. We know about this for quite some time. The capitalist model of infinite growth on a finite planet is impossible. How many times have we spoke about that? The problem with capitalism is it's the market and all of that is a gambling casino predicated on constant growth, not steady state growth. Every equipment, everything, machine requires steady state. That is a position of perpetual existence. But if you're talking growth all the time, growth is, if you're doing a percentage all the time, it goes on exponentially, brothers and sisters, so it's not possible. All right, let's see, E2247, hello relatives. Biden both groom Harris and explain child tax credit in major speech. There was a very good speech. I listened to it. I think that is what keeps the Democrats in power. Because at this point, you just have to make tapes of McConnell's talking about giveaways and say, okay, you've got your $300 a month from things that you, from the system that hasn't paid you well for decades. Now McConnell, if he comes into power, if the Congress goes to Republicans, you lose all of that. And I love the way they did it. It needs reauthorization. So excellent. They can make their point. Jessica Taylor, welcome aboard. Welcome aboard. Let's see what else we got here. All species have an environmental niche. Humans not likely to be an exception. For millennia, human lives mostly between 11 and 15 degrees C. Got you. Okay, folks, let's go ahead and get started. What I'm going to do is I'm going to start with the interview today, and then we'll move on to all the other clips that I have. So let's go ahead and get started with Seth, and we'll move on thereafter. Welcome to one more edition of Politics and Rana. McBerto Willis, your host. Today we have a very special guest. Seth David Radwell is the author of American Schism and an international known business executive and thought leader in consumer marketing. He previously served as president of East Scholastic, the digital arm of the global children's publishing and education company, and as president of Bookspan Bertelsmann, where he developed book clubs for diverse readership, Black Expressions and Mosaico, in addition to overseeing all editorial marketing, media, and digital functions for many other iconic brands. He holds a master's degree in public policy for the Kennedy School of Government, Harvard University, and Bachelor of Arts degree summa cum laude from Columbia College, Columbia University. Currently divides his time between Nueva York, New York, Los Angeles, Paris. How are you doing today, Senor Seth?
I am thrilled to be with you here. I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, look, I'm just the title of the book, man, American Schism. Come on. You have to like it. But anyhow, you talk about there being two Americas. What are we talking about? Because we know that. But a lot of Americans, a lot of people want to kind of say that that's not a reality. Explain.
Well, so of course, there is a tremendous American divide today, as we all know. But I feel that the current dialogue and the current approach to understanding it is actually misinformed, because we're caught in two bubbles. I mean, one we hear about all the time, Egberto, is our partisan bubble, that we're getting news from one source, and there's no more kind of Walter Cronkite news that's objective. But there's another bubble. The other bubble is a time bubble. We think that we're so unique, but the truth is that the political divisions in this country are not new. They've existed for our entire history. So my mission on this research project was to do an investigative tracing, to take our divide and understand it back from the founding of the country and how it's evolved over the centuries. And that's exactly what I did in American Schism. I go back to the founding, where there was a major disagreement, a kind of a break in views between two Enlightenment schools, what I call the moderate Enlightenment and the radical Enlightenment. And I'll tell you more about that in a minute. The point being is that the antecedents for what we see today, the rancor and the acrimony, go back to our founding. And unless we understand their chronological history and their evolution, we're not going to be able to make progress at getting to solutions.
And, you know, I'm so glad to hear somebody say that. Our problems are all that makes up what makes America began at the beginning. Oh, great. We just realized that all this began at the beginning. Now, you said something interesting. You said the Declaration of Independence was radical, but
yes,
the Constitution was moderate. Now, here's the deal. I agree with that. I wonder if I agree with it for the same reason you do. So explain.
Okay. Well, one of the things the book does, after laying out this radical moderate split, it then analyzes our history through six discrete periods using that as a lens. So you bring up a great one, which is the first major one. The radical nature of the Declaration states that all men are created equal and are endowed by their creator with inalienable rights. That is a radical statement that comes from Thomas Jefferson's pen, which is ironic in its own sense, which we can get into later, but which comes out of the French Enlightenment and the notion of the notion of a republic, the social contract requiring an egalitarian form of government of the people to be just. So there are two differences, main differences, with the radicals and the moderates, to make it easy. One is that the radicals believed in an egalitarian representative democracy as the sole legitimate form of government. And the second thing is that the radicals believed there needed to be a strong separation between church and state. They documented how the church for centuries had colluded with the monarchy to keep the people oppressed. Whereas the moderates, people like Alexander Hamilton and John Adams, were very much aristocratic Republicans. So that's the crux of the difference. So to answer your question, the Declaration is quite radical. So what happened between 1776 and 1787? Entire chapter of American Schism. Why was it that all of a sudden that things became so moderate and we had a compromise to keep the South the Southern colonies involved and do crazy things like what would seem absurd today, like calling African Americans 3/5 of a person. How did we make those compromises? And the answer to that question is that declaring independence from Britain and stating bold ideals is one thing. Building a country with real solutions and a complex system of government had the ability to raise taxes, pay for the war, develop a foreign policy, all of that complexity, as we say, the devil is in the details. That complexity required an incredible amount of what's today a dirty word, compromise. And so James Madison and many others literally compromised between what became the Federalists and the Republicans on these two alternate models. And we ended up with a compromise that of course was as Lincoln has told us, almost 100 years later, didn't do justice to the creed of the Declaration. Remember, he said, our work is not done. But it was a first attempt, and it was certainly better than the Articles of Confederation. In summary, to answer your question, I think there was a need for practical solutions that required compromise. And so people like that were problem solvers, geniuses like Alexander Hamilton, who could run the country, they put solutions in place that would actually work.
Now, when does compromise become capitulation?
That is one of the most incredible questions. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because clearly, if you look at our history, we have examples when compromise has really worked. And I could talk about one that's really very, very important right now. But in the case of African Americans and Native Americans, I would say compromises have really fell short. Those are some of the areas where, I mean, what American schism does after going through this history, it boils down the key questions that are really foundational from all the stuff you hear today to three things. And one of them is, do we truly believe in a government bottom up of the people? And if the answer to that question is yes, and by the way, I think there are many people in the Republican
Party. What do you think the answer is?
I think it's the only form of government that's epistemologically superior. What do I mean by that? It's a form of government where we can learn. In other words, in an autocracy, which of course the world is moving towards, decisions are handed down from above and people have to live with it. But the radical enlighteners, especially the French radical enlighteners, understood that the true meaning of the Enlightenment was the capacity of the individual and the education of the individual. Democracy is the only form of government that allows humans to use their God-given capacities of empirical observation and reason to come to solutions. So it is a superior form.
I want to stop you in a second here, because and this may be part of your book, maybe not a part of your book, because I think, first of all, I think this discussion is actually great. We talk about the problems beginning from the inception of the country, from the founding of the country, radicalism versus moderate, etc. And I asked you the question as far as when does compromise become capitulation? Because as you rightly pointed out, that as far as natives are concerned, as far as blacks are concerned, as far as Chinese is concerned, everybody could make a compromise on the lives of those. That's where compromise were made. The question does that we, I think it's essential for us to ask is, isn't it then maybe the hypocrisy of the initial that allows us to be where we're at today, true or false?
That's a tough one. I would say false in the following sense. There's always hypocrisy, so I'm not denying that. But what I'm trying to do in the American Schism, Humberto, is take a longer term perspective, a longitudinal. So let me throw out a couple of stats. And 200 years ago, life expectancy on the planet was 31 years. Now it's over 70. 200 years ago, 1 in 5 children died before the age of 5. Today, almost all survive. 200 years ago, 4/5 of the world lived in extreme poverty. Today, 1/5 of the world does. So we, over the past 200 years, thanks to our endowment of the Enlightenment, of science and reason, we have made more progress in human prosperity than in the prior 2000. So over the long haul, we've made tremendous progress. Now, that doesn't mean that everything is great and there are parts of society that have really not been treated, that have been oppressed for a long time. But I think the point is we can't give up on our, there's this notion today, Egberto, which drives me crazy, of everyone having their own truth. Like as
there's
if
it's not, every, yeah, right.
Yeah, there's a, such a thing as objective truth. And unless we embrace it, and you know, the US, the country has been built on disagreements. We can disagree as long as we're having a rational argument based on facts and truth. And that's what I, what made me write this book and leave my business career on, put it on hiatus, if you will, was I could not tolerate, it was bad enough to tolerate how our political discourse had collapsed, but I couldn't tolerate the assault on truth, how objective truth has disappeared. And so I'm trying to bring this back to your question, because I think there's been hypocrisy, there's been compromises, but over the long haul, we have made progress. And what drives me crazy about the right, or the far right for sure, and other elements of the established right, is this notion of spreading what are basically lies, of not believing in facts, okay? And that, I mean, one of the great examples is, that, you know, we've counted the vote in Arizona 19 times. Do we have to count it again? I mean, that's what I call, I reject that approach because it's denying the facts. And I you know, I have debates with people all the time on both sides of the aisle, and I'm happy to discuss issues. But as soon as they start, I always say we can agree on we have to agree on the facts. We can disagree on the interpretation of the data. That's fine. But there's a big difference between that. And so the American schism is trying to show how today the dialogue in America is held hostage to this identity politics where so many people feel imprisoned by their own self-imposed mobs. They're afraid to say anything. And the left bears some responsibility for that too, which I point out in the book. But so there have been hypocrisies, but we've made enormous progress. And I can give you one of the things American schism does is go through examples like the Progressive Party and the Progressive Era of the 19th century, or certainly the Civil Rights Movement. But there have been many times. What the book really ends up showing is that there's this pendulum swing. We tend to make like radical reconstruction. We had an incredible opportunity in 18, as you know, I'm sure you know.
Yeah, 1865. Yeah.
But in the next couple of elections, Egberto, 85% of Southern African Americans were registered and were voting.
Right.
And then fast forward 15 years, but thanks to the Ku Klux Klan and everything else, 5% were. So we had this pendulum swing where we seemed to make progress and move towards a more egalitarian, embracing notion that fulfills the creed and the declaration. And then almost like every force has an equal and opposite reaction, we have like a pushback. And well, I argue, go ahead.
In engineering, what we have this stuff known as a steady state error, and that's where you keep getting those swings. In other words, it never coalesces to the mean; it just keeps swinging around the mean. So that is sort of a thing that occurs in science as well. So it never coalesces to where it should, but it keeps going back and forth. Anyhow, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about economy. You says, how has the economy shaped the ideas and beliefs of the American on both sides of the divide? Because I want to tackle that a little bit with regards to your book.
Well, so it's the social and political analysis, if you will, of these two different sides and how they fought with each other and contended cannot be looked at without understanding the economics behind it. They're fundamental from the form of, I mean, Jefferson's original notion of an agrarian economy. That was this idyllic vision that he had, to what happened. For example, I mentioned the Progressive Era. I mean, the amazing coalition of the Farmers Alliance, which were Southerners that were incredibly mistreated by the economic system of the U.S. that related to the dollar, the greenback policy, and various things. But they ended up making a coalition in some ways with Northerners who were oppressed workers, immigrants. Most of that entire movement, which led to huge change, was economic. It came out of economic need. So my point being is that for every one of the vignettes that I go through in American Schism, you have to portray the economic issues at hand. If you fast forward till today, I would argue that I mentioned before that the French radicals talked about this collusion between the monarchy and the church. We've had a collusion in this country since Billy Graham between the Conservative Party and evangelicalism.
Yeah.
It's a similar collusion where, you know, for economic reasons, conservatives hold their nose and get on board for their own self-interest. Where, you know, we're for all intents and purposes, we're a plutocracy run by the rich, right? So they get on board with evangelicals because, you know, ask yourself this question, Egberto: how did Donald Trump get all those 81 million people to vote against their self-interest by supporting the tax plan, which of course benefited his tax plan? He actually said it at the signing. He said to his colleagues, his business colleagues who were there, this is going to make you guys quite rich. And people vote for him. My point being is that there's been a collusion going on between elements of the evangelical church in America and the conservative business movement for quite a while. And I have nothing against faith or religion, but what I do think is not viable with a democracy is when religion or a certain religion takes hostage certain political actors for their own benefits. And that's what's described in the third part of the book in great detail.
I mean, and that is understandable. Look, let me tell you how I talk about it a whole lot. I talk about it being an illness, right? Because, I mean, you just said it perfectly. How do you vote against your own interests? Because you don't know. You don't naturally do these things. I mean, a lot of people like to use a lot of the isms, right? The racism, the sexisms, and all of that. That is true. But you know what I've seen? I tell you what, and I don't know how you feel about this, so getting away a little bit from the book here. When Obama got elected, I said to a lot of folks in my show, it proved my point that there is a limit. There is a limit where the isms don't matter. I gave folks an example of when Obama's people were campaigning in Pennsylvania. A guy went up to a house and said, "Hey, we are here to canvass. Who are you voting for?" And the wife turns around to the guy. I don't know why she thought she had to do that, but she turned around to the guy and said, "Honey, who are we voting for?" And he turns around and he says, "We are voting for the end guy." You know, you get my point. And the point being, at that point, his economic necessities, went above his racism.
Right, right.
That he did right. That. And I've always said that in America, we're not, you know, we will reach the point eventually where the right will not be successful in doing this, because eventually people's personal economy will supersede all their isms.
Well, I hope so. But if you look at the example in the rest of the world in terms of autocracy on the march, I'm not so sure. I mean, you know, I don't want to get, again, too far off the scope, but what's going on in China is amazing. And in the sense that because the economic benefits overall are so great and everybody's rising,
right,
they're allowing more and more autocracy. I mean, it's becoming a more oppressive system in many ways, but economically it's not. See, it's a tricky thing. I am personally very concerned, and I know you work, because I've read some of your stuff, about this assault on the, I think we have to reestablish what I say, fight unreason with reason. We have to reclaim our discourse. There is an assault on truth going on in this country now that is so powerful. That is what, of course, the Russians embraced a while ago in terms of disinformation, but it's now been embraced by certain parts of the Republican Party.
But and Sam, let me stop you. That's the importance of your book. Because remember what I just said, right? What I just said is, I think in the long run, people are going to be like that guy with Obama. But what's going to give them the impetus to do that are people like yourself, your book, having the baseline. I always talk to people about planting seeds, not wanting them to change today,
right,
but planting seeds so that when the time comes, they'll have that building block on which to change.
So I love that you said that, Egberto, because here's why. So most of my career has been in business. I do have a master's degree in policy, but I built many companies and I took a hiatus because I couldn't, most of my personal and business network, whether it was left or right, they didn't want to talk about politics anymore. They felt it was a third rail. Mm-hmm. And they do what I call put their head in the sand. And I don't think you change people overnight or even maybe over a while. No. But I think you cannot avoid discussing in a rational way and respectful way issues, especially with the young, because young people cannot take democracy for granted. So I wrote this book to start this movement bottom up of fighting unreason with reason. I think we have to reclaim our democracy because without objective truth and rational debate, a democracy is doomed.
I agree with you 100%. Now, we're at time 20 right now, but I have some more questions I want to ask you. So we're going to go a little bit over. As far as why do you think, let me put it this way. I was surprised that Donald Trump got 75 million votes. In other words, if we had kept Hillary Clinton's level of, if we didn't go on over, if, when I say we, I'm talking about progressives and Democrats, had overperformed at 81 million, that 75 million that Trump got was even more than what Hillary Clinton got, beating him by 3 million.
That's right.
How do you explain that?
So there's a chapter in the book that, remember I told you about this pendulum back and forth?
Right.
In some ways, it looks at the Trump era as a pendulum pushed back from the Obama era. But here's, Trump was a master demagogue. And if you look across history, what demagogues do is they figure out how to push buttons that incite rage and fear. I mean, this is not, you know, this has been going on with demagogues for history. Trump was a master at that. Now, he didn't create the rage. That had been building for years. And the book talks about that as well. But he was a master of unleashing it, unleashing the rage. And that's why he develops a cult-like following. So the answer to your question is, he's created a whole movement that denies truth. Let me give you an example. I was sitting downstairs with one of my neighbors who I hadn't seen in a while because I was away. And I was talking to him and I said, I just got the vaccine. That's why I'm traveling again. I'm really comfortable. And I said to him, what about you? Did you get vaccinated? And he said to me, are you kidding me? I'm not going to get that vaccine. Now, I'm not saying that there are some good reasons maybe people don't want to get vaccinated, but his one sentence, he showed me that he was part of this cult of denying that we have a virus that claimed how many American lives? 600,000?
606,000.
Okay. So like, that's what I mean about living in reality. You know, what I call in the book, I call it this lay postmodernism. You know, the foundation of the Enlightenment was all about objective truth. And then that was the prevalent model of the world until 50 years ago, when the Reconstruction postmodern movement said everything is relative. And now that's translated into everyone can have their own truth. No, that's not true. What the postmodern movement really wanted to do was bring other perspectives into the conversation, because so much of our history was written by white men. So the intent was to bring other viewpoints in, which is fundamental, but that doesn't mean that objective truth doesn't exist. So we've gone way too far. I mean, I believe that fixing this is going to take time, but it has to do with things like civic education, which is required for
democracy. That is where I was going to next. I was going to say, we need to close out with you giving us an example of, because you know, there's a whole lot to the book. What we want to do, we want people to go out there and get the book. But give us a little bit of things that you think that people would love to hear. Say, hey, there is a solution to all of this.
Okay, great. So let me give you a couple examples. There's two solutions I'll give you that are in the book in the third part. One is structural and one is more of an investment. The structural one is easy. The way our system works, we are captive by two parties that run the show, and they're a monopoly. And we can't have other candidates in, because every time they're a spoiler, they take votes from one. There's a thing called ranked choice voting, where there could be six or seven platforms out there, and voters are allowed to rank them in order of preference. So as soon as some of the lower ones drop out, their votes get reallocated. And all of a sudden, third parties are not spoilers. Mm-hmm. This is a structural thing that has been shown to bring, it's more democratic in many ways. So that's a structural thing that I go into in some detail in the book. One which let's structural and more about priorities. You know, we as a society in America spend an amazing amount of time and wealth managing our money and our investment in financial assets. We don't nearly invest as much time and attention to our human capital. If we need to make a significant if we don't realize that what's going on in the world with China and Asia, if we don't re-embrace investment not only in STEM, science, technology, math, but also civic education about what it means to be in a democracy, as Daniel Allen from Harvard has pointed out, we are not going to be able to compete. So what I'm saying is that's about a priority. We have to shift our gears and realize that not only has education become wildly unequal in access, the actual topics that we teach our children have moved away from debate, analysis of opinions, the ability to objectively receive information and weigh evidence. That's what you need for a democracy.
You know, I think you're summing it all up when you say what we probably need to start doing again is teaching critical thinking, how people can actually learn about critical thinking. Now, Seth, last question that I always ask is, what would you have liked me to, first of all, in 10 seconds, tell people why they should get your book. And then in 30 seconds, please go ahead and tell me what I should have asked you that I didn't. In 20 seconds.
So people should get the book because I think the unique part of the book is this historical tracing that shows that even though we seem like we're so divided today, the divisions are not new. There's a real history that unless we understand and embrace, we're going to have trouble making a difference today, which is breaking out of our time bubble. The question that I wish you would have asked me is, well, or I wanted to discuss more is, why is it that through social media or through other forms of communication, our dialogue has become so rancorous? Whereas, you know, that my data show that 70% of Americans reject both the extreme left and right and believe we have more in common. Why doesn't that come out? And the answer is, we are now, you know, the human species over millennia of evolution have these amygdala-driven knee-jerk reactions based on fear and anger, and those things are important. They get endorphins going. If you know, Egberto, we all know this because if you're in a sports arena, we know how good it feels to be with the in-group and attack the out-group. It feels wonderful. That's a wonderful thing for a football game. It's no way to conduct public policy. And so that when I say our entire approach to this Twitter storm is wrong and it's misguided, and we have to say enough. And I'm calling on my professional colleagues with Fight Unreason with Reason to embrace American Schism as a platform of rejecting the dialogue today and starting it fresh.
Seth David Radwell, author of American Schism, thank you so kindly for having been on Politics Done Right.
Egberto, it's been such a pleasure, and I'd be happy to come back with you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we will definitely have him back. That was, I love Seth. Seth is always vibrant. He's exciting. And, you know, he has it down right. Thank you, Breach, for reminding me that I need to do it. Yes, folks, please, if you are on YouTube, please click that join button right now and become a member of our team, a member of the PDR Posse. And while you're at it, why not get the cup designed by Breach MCP, the leader of our PDR Posse. Just go ahead and get it at the link that I just put in there. If you don't see a join me button, or if you're not on YouTube, or if you're on one of the other platforms, go to politicsdoneright.com/YouTube. politicsdoneright.com/YouTube. We need 1,000 members there, and we need 1,000 members at politicsdoneright.com/Patreon. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N for our podcast listeners. P-A-T-R-E-O-N, politicsdoneright.com/Patreon. You can also support us, of course, with PayPal, politicsdoneright.com/PayPal, politicsdoneright.com/PayPal. Here are the mugs on the screen. Of course, I always forget to put that on right away. But anyhow, folks, you can also support us by going to our store, shopping at our store, get our books at our store, our T-shirts, all that good stuff. Anybody who buy the books at our stores, of course, we send them a bumper sticker and all that, and a signed autographed copy of the book. Now, if you rather get the books at Amazon, or you rather get the audiobook or any one of those, please go ahead and go to politicsdoneright.com/books, politicsdoneright.com/books. Thank you so kindly for your support. Okay, let's go ahead and continue getting busy. Look, Fox News got, you know, our good old Saki did it again. Check this out, and then we'll take it on the other side. I so love Steve Doocy. Steve Doocy comes to the press room every day at the White House. He's trying to embarrass the president. He's trying to Jen Psaki, our pretty darn good press secretary, every time. And he uses Fox News' talking points. And I love it. And the reason I love it is that we know that a lot of our narrative isn't necessarily carried by Fox News. But when Steve Doocy is doing his thing, we know that it's carried. So he opens the door with the silly questions. And then Jen Psaki gets a chance to whack-a-mole them with a new audience. The Fox News audience. Thank you so kindly, Jen Psaki. But not only that, you give those of us who are independent journalists and bloggers to amplify what Steve Doocy is doing, and in the process, allowing that message to go out. So let's take a look again at Steve Doocy making yet another attempt to what I call to be whack-a-mode.
Thank you, Jen. About voting rights and these Texas lawmakers who have come to Washington, mm-hmm. Do you know any examples from his 36 years in the Senate that Joe Biden just hopped on a train and left town to avoid a vote that he knew he was going to lose?
Welcome back. Look, I think that the president's view is that these Texas legislators were making a statement through action in opposition to efforts in their state to oppose restrictions on people's fundamental rights and their rights to vote in their state. That is why they departed. The vice president met with these legislators yesterday, and the president, I should say, certainly applauds their actions and their outspoken opposition to states to effective measures in their state.
And maybe it is funny to think about it that way, but the president is talking about this as the most serious assault on our democracy.
I don't think anything about this is funny. I think what is important to note, though, here is that there are 28 states, including Texas, where there are laws in process to make it harder to vote. And it requires bold action. It requires bold voices to speak out against that and make sure people understand their rights. That's exactly what's happening here.
So does the candidate, who's now the president, who told people he knew how to make deals with Republicans, he's meeting with Republicans today, does he think that the best way to prevent something bad from happening, that he thinks is bad from happening in Texas, is for these lawmakers to be hiding out in a different state or for them to go back and sit down at the table?
The president fundamentally believes you should work together in areas where you can find agreement, as he is on the bipartisan infrastructure framework that is going to help rebuild roads and rails and bridges around country, and also that you should be outspoken where you have concerns about affronts to democracy. That's what he did yesterday, and that's what these legislators are doing now.
I want you to see, he opened the door. He opened the door for her to talk to his audience, for her to speak a little bit of sense to their audience. Well, the president did what he needed to do. Where he sees that democracy is at risk, hey, let people react to democracy being at risk. And he even gave her the open door to say, we are working on infrastructure for you people. So every time Steve Doocy tries to do a gotcha, her comeback is always, guess what? Listeners of Fox News and Steve Doocy, here are the answers to ridiculous questions, and here is the sensible of the sensibility, what is occurring sensibly by or through our administration. Thank you so kindly. So if you want to know why I love to blog about Steve Doocy's interaction with Psaki, one, it's funny. But most importantly, it gives us an audience that's out there to hear stupidity relative to what's really happening for positively for the people that are listening to this guy. And you know what? The good thing about Jen Psaki is she's always able to put some of the policy that's going to be beneficial to those people listening out there as well. So that she's not just answering the ridiculous question. She's actually framing the ridiculous question with what we're going to be doing for you. Yes, yes, yes. And there is your thing, Senor. It's outrageous that they obstructed voting on our bill designed to obstruct voting. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Can't believe it. I can't believe it. Lee Grant. Egberto, that's Peter Ducey's, that is Steve Ducey's dad. I mean, no, that is Steve Ducey's son. Yeah, you're right. Michael Rodden, I'm with you. Need to watch this a second time. There's just too much info taken in during one viewing. Egberto, put it up a keeper today. Actually, I already have it separated, and I put the link in, but right in the blog for the post, you can find it there. On screen now, okay, let's see what else we got. Egberto, we got Lee Alexander, welcome aboard, brother. Only the very wealthy enjoy a democracy because political bribery has been made legal by the Supreme Court. Yes, it is called not only Citizens United, but it's also called McCutcheon and a few other Supreme Court decisions that just about gave carte blanche to all the rich folk. Anyhow, let's see what else we got here. Michael Rodney says, no, I put that one up already. British MCP Court, the SLP, look at the image on the posting. I think I saw something from Bruce. Let's see. You cannot, this is Lee Alexander, you cannot have any form of democracy without a well-educated population. We live in an oligarchy with the bare forms of democracy. Very prescient point. Very prescient point, Lee Alexander. Let's see who else we got here. Para ver, estoy subiendo. Radwell's comments are pretty good, but the elephant in the room is the dysfunctional theology on which the invasion of non-European lands was launched, a.k.a. the doctrine of discovery. There goes E2247, prescient. All right, let's see. Michael Rodney says the customization of social media bubbles has led to widening division. I've seen a lot of memes where the left attacks right and right attacks left. These memes rarely offer a nuance. I'm glad you put that out there. That's why I engage everybody, because there is always nuance to look at, brothers and sisters. Always nuances to look at. Let's see what else we got here. Boomer U. I'm scared about Boomer U. River Keepers groups can do amazing things and may be of interest, local yet connected. All right, Boomer U. I like that. That actually sounds pretty good. All right, Suckle of AP. Probabilistic forecast for 21st century climate based on uncertainties in emission without policy and climate parameters. I saw something from Bruce. Oh, there we go. Bruce. Jesus would not have joined the major Christian faiths, from Bruce Pollard, as well as Canada should keep their tar sands in the ground. Absolutely not, because it's there, mean it must be used. Exactly. Thank you, Bruce. Very prescient. Exactly, exactly, exactly. Let's see if Dalia Lugo, my Republican former in-laws love to bash me. Don't worry, give them love. Nanette Bird Smith, welcome aboard. Who have I missed thus far? I like to salute my peeps. Paul Fleming from ATL. Bienvenido, hermano. ¿Cómo estás? And let's see, May Wood. Haven't seen you in a couple of days, May. We also have coming down. Cheryl Fleming, welcome aboard. Imagine you're Paul Fleming's wife or daughter. I am just making assumptions because you said ATL checking in. I know somebody's going to correct me pretty soon. All right, who else we got here coming down? Boomer, I will walk on a third rail. Won't ask you to. Look, let me tell you something. What we're doing here is important. Let's see. Egberto Willis, didn't TXGOP pass the law? The Senate did, but the House cannot, because the House is, they don't have quorum. Bruce Pollard said, we need a truly progressive party. Is there one that will help us improve our world? No. What we have to do, Brother Bruce, is we have to infiltrate the most likely party that we can turn into a progressive party, and that happens to be the Democratic Party. long time ago, I went ahead and I said, become precinct chairs and do all those different pieces until you are able to run the party, not only externally, but internally. So that's what we're doing. That's why I became a precinct chair. That's why a lot of other people became precinct chairs. And Bruce, I don't know if you're a precinct chair or whether your particular precinct has a chair already, but I know there are probably 500 chairs missing in the Harris County. I'm pretty sure you could be one, my brother. Carl Cox, money buys influence in the courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court. Absolutely so. All right, let's go ahead and play the other video. This one here is the author that says, "El Señor." Well, I'll tell you. Here you go. Michael Wolff, author of The Landslide. He wasn't kind to the president again. And what he had to say about the president's mental state is astounding. I want you to listen to this, and then we'll go ahead and take it on the other side.
Michael, final question, and it kind of intersects with inside the journalism beltway where you and I have resided for quite some time. Did you learn anything that came close to tempting you to raise your hand and tell the nation or the wider world, because the malfeasance you ran across was outrageous enough, big enough, impactful enough to even violate a author confidentiality agreement?
Well, I know is in this book, and I would say I wrote this book in just about 3 months. So I rushed this book. I rushed through this book first because I've had quite a bit of practice now writing books about Trump, but also because I thought that this was incredibly important for people to know that the president of the United States, and let me be very specific about this, the president of the United States is deranged.
I know a closing quote when I hear one, and that was it from the author Michael Wolff, the author of this book, Landslide, The Final Days of the Trump White House.
Now, the reason that I wanted to put this out there, even though I think many of us have already come to the conclusion that the past president, El Señor Trump, was deranged, but to see and watch Republicans kowtow to this president, somebody that is deranged, to see them appease him, to see them try to not make him upset, it's kind of curious to me. Because they're playing a dangerous game. I understand that they want to make sure that this deranged ex-president doesn't go and get the Republican base in such a frenzy that if people piss him off, he just say, guys, don't vote, or guys, don't vote for any Republican, and then the Trump zombies abide. So I think they're buying time. They're hoping that if they give him some time, they can win 2022. And just maybe they can string him along a little bit longer and win 2024. But even if they just win 2022, by then they would have corrupted government so much so that winning 2024 and for the foreseeable future is likely a foregone conclusion. But here's the caveat. With all this information coming out on him now, with the possibility that this guy, as we are seeing right now, is so much more crooked than we even could have surmised, aren't they playing with fire? I mean, you're going to keep the cult, but still, the average American citizen is still an American. And I think there's a particular limit to be pushed. I think that is the reason why we have to remember to always continue engaging all our people. Everybody. I don't care ideology or whatever. Because you know what? In the long run, it's worth it. It's going to be worth having these people who are still kind of Trumpsters. It's going to be just necessary to give these people a place to land. And you don't have to make this a sentimental thing. Just remember this. We need more than 50 plus 1 to govern. And it doesn't matter that you don't like someone too much. It doesn't matter that you cannot fathom the ideology that they have from a political standpoint. we need all the allies we can get. So when I hear this guy reiterating the derangement of the president and the possibility that more comes out between now and when people's minds are cauterized on 2022, stay tuned. I think there's a lot more coming. All right, folks, I have to do another video real quickly, and we're short on time, so let's go right into Senator McCaskill, and then we'll come back. The death march in red states has begun. Many are following their conservative brethren and not getting vaccines because somehow it is messing with your freedom. Somehow it is not all that bad. Well, you know, I want you to listen to Claire McCaskill because finally somebody is going to hit those who need to be hit, like the evangelicals and specifically the GOP in their state. Check this out, and then let's go ahead and take it on the other side.
Claire McCaskill, we careen into a domestic topic that you're familiar with, and that is the spike in virus cases in your home state of Missouri. Does this necessarily have to do with its color on the political map? Is this anti-vaxxing come home to roost?
It has. And it's the abject failure of the leadership, political leadership of the state, which is now dominated by the Republican Party. The governor, all of the statewide elected officials, except one who's a Democrat. And this is happening. Brian, you know this part of my state. You used to hang out there in many years ago. But this, we're talking about Southwest Missouri. And I would say we've talked a lot about pop stars and community leaders. I don't need to tell you that maybe the most important people that need to do some soul searching and read some of the New Testament are the evangelical ministers that are sprinkled throughout the states that are having problems with accepting the vaccine that Trump not only developed, but he took. This was Trump's vaccine until he left office. And if we don't get beyond the political issue and get to the health and the safety issue, we have more people in ICU units in the hospital now in Missouri than we had a year ago. And that is primarily because of the failure of the Republicans in this state to take it seriously. And I think the failure of evangelical ministers in rural Missouri, that they are failing the people that come to them for spiritual guidance. They should be helping them talk to their doctors, find doctors, and do the right thing and take the vaccine. It's heartbreaking to see how many people are in ICU units right now that don't need to be.
Yes, it's a shame. And here's the headline, NPR. COVID cases in parts of Missouri and Arkansas surge to levels not seen since winter. In other words, these red states will be ensuring that the same kind of sickness we saw in hospitals, maybe not deaths because we've learned how to control the virus a little bit better, but trust me, the expense, the cost to people's lives, it's going to be horrendous, all in red states, because we have a Republican Party, a conservative movement that is intent. You can't say it any better. Their intent of killing those in their party who don't think on their own. Because I can guarantee you, every single one of those people on TV, from Tucker Carlson to Donald Trump, to all these evangelical leaders, I can guarantee you they're vaccinated, but they have ulterior motives. Maybe they want to get rid of those folks who they believe don't really matter. Think about that. What is in it for them? Tom Hartman yesterday said, or in one of his papers recently, he said, it's more than a death wish. He believes that this is a cynical way to try to prevent the economy from really recovering and somehow then accusing Biden's administration for the issue. I think it's deeper than that. I think this is severe, utter evil. Absolutely. So anyhow, folks, let's see. Maywood says, Michael Rudnick, yes, but he's asking about a progressive party, not a liberal party. We need to turn what we call a liberal party, the Democratic Party, which isn't all that liberal, into a progressive party, because the structures are already there, in my humble opinion. I don't think we can start from scratch and for the speed that we need to get things done. Just my opinion. I could be wrong, but I, like I tell folks, if you have a better way, do it. I'll be on board. You have a better way, you do it. I'll be on board. The country is being, from British MCP, the country is basically now being fractured into vaccinated and infected, not vaccinated and unvaccinated. Oh, I love that. I love that play with words, Bridge. That is perfect. Because it's, you're either going to be vaccinated or you're going to be infected. I love that. McCaskill is just another conservative corporatist Democrat. Look, but you know what? She's from Missouri. I give a lot. I give folks like even Manchin and her, I give them sort of a pass. Because once they vote the way we want them to vote, then they are going to lose the next election. And, you know, I think it's time for many of them to sacrifice for the will of the people. Egberto wants to push Democrats left. We are trying that too. I would prefer a diversity of strategies, including electing independents to local offices. Brother, I'm with you. I am for all these, you know, what I always talk about, how you handle viruses from different directions. I am with you, brother. I'm with you. Do it. Do it. Do it. Get it done. Chesty Puller had opinions about today and wasn't a prophet. Let's see. We got to hold Democratic Party accountable to live up to its promises. Absolutely so. Courtney, the SLP, says, I can't get down with McCaskill. She is no longer in office. What is her excuse? We'll talk about that another time. Maywood, progressives can be conservatives and liberals and not necessarily progressive. Yeah, but we want progressives that are progressive, right? Right, May? I think you're saying that, you know, be careful what you wish for. Anyhow, we got to get out of here. So, folks, please remember, click that join button if you are on YouTube. Become a part of our team. If you're not on YouTube, if you're on some other network, please go to politicsandright.com/YouTube, politicsandright.com/YouTube. Alternatively, please remember to go to politicsandright.com/Patreon, politicsandright.com/Patreon. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N, politicsandright.com/Patreon. Please support our store at politicsandright.com/store, politicsandright.com/store. You can also support us via politicsandright.com/PayPal, politicsandright.com. Whoops, let me screen that up here. politicsandright.com/PayPal. And lastly, but not least, please get our books at politicsandright.com/books, politicsandright.com/books. My name is Egberto Willis. This is Politics Done Right. And you guys know how I end this, baby. I am what? What am I again? Out. We spend a lot of time deconstructing the news, trying to parse it into a form that everybody can understand. We try to find those little nitpicks where it flies above the fray, etc. If you really like these videos that we do, I want to ask a big favor. Please go ahead, number one, subscribe to our channel, and number two, please join if you can. Thank you so kindly for watching. Keep watching. Please remember to share. We must populate the entire internet with our progressive message, a message that we know is what most Americans say that they want. So help us, please join.